You know, that's such a complex question. There's so many complex answers to it. I think that...
More of a threat, say, than Saudi Arabia or Pakistan or United Arab Emirates or Syria or Iran or North Korea or any of these other countries we chose not to invade.
I think that what's happened is it's almost like... I love analogies. The analogy that I can give is that it was a man who basically had a can of rats, basically. You know, we could see the can of rats, and there was a man that owned this can of rats. Well, we got rid of the man, and he took the lid off, and now it's like the rats are scattering all over the place. And I'm not trying to say that all the people in Iraq are rats, but obviously it has been a powder keg because there have been a lot of people that were suppressed by this dictator that were not allowed to act out their, you know, their stuff that they
well,
do. You know, cutting off heads and cutting off the ends and things like
that. No, I do.
And so, but now that they're out there, it's kind of like, okay, were they out there before, or now because Saddam is not sort of controlling them, you know, are they now a threat, or were they a threat before? So that's what I'm saying. It's just so incredibly complex. What we are seeing in America, though, is that there is a threat to our way of life by people that really don't like us. They really don't think that we even deserve to live. They think that because
we
don't
agree. You're talking about
Al-Qaeda. Well, Al-Qaeda and the radical Muslims. I'm not talking about, you know, Muslims in general.
They exist.
I mean, yeah, they exist.
Right.
And
I agree.
And so now we're seeing a side of the world that we didn't really know before. I mean, we knew about 9/11. We knew about the Al-Qaeda attacks. We knew about this horrendous thing that happened to us by, you know, 19 people that were crazed. But we're going, oh, was it just 19 people were crazed? Or are they representing millions of other people who could rise up and do the same thing now? And I think if Iraq did anything, it really sort of, it was a wake-up call to us that, oh, my gosh, there is a real battle that's going on out there in the world.
Well, let me disagree with you. I think that 9/11, if you will, was the wake-up call. And Iraq, I would argue, was gasoline on the fire. It seems to me that your analogy is correct, that there was a can of problems. I don't know if I want to say rats, but problems in Iraq. Frankly, it's very similar to me to the situation in Yugoslavia, where you had an authoritarian dictator, Tito, but he controlled with such force and such power that the internecine conflicts between the Serbs and the Croats and the Kosovars, the religious conflicts, were kept under wraps because he was such a strong dictator.
Right.
The same situation we have in Iraq. You have Kurdistan and the Sunni area and the Shiite area, and in fact he was keeping it under control, and we were keeping Saddam under control through a system of sanctions, through a system of overflights that began George Bush Sr., continued under Bill Clinton, began at the beginning of the Bush presidency. We actually had Saddam Hussein under control, and he had this can of rats, if you will, under control. It seems to me that the real threat to our national security was Al-Qaeda and other countries, countries like Iran, countries like North Korea. And the fact that we have opened up this can of rats, or to use another metaphor, poured gasoline on the fire, I think we've made it worse. I think the entire world now is against us, whereas they were for us on September 11th. And I think that Arabs believe, particularly in Iraq, but not just in Iraq, that we are there for empire. We are there to conquer. We are there to take over the oil fields. A recent poll showed that 80% of Iraqis, 80% want us to leave, and 47%, almost half, believe attacks against Americans are justified. Now, our president, and Dick Cheney even more than our president, said they were going to greet us as liberators. They were going to throw rose petals at our feet. Do you think that Cheney really believed that and was mistaken, or was he trying to sell us something here?
Well, I think originally, I mean, whenever Saddam was toppled, I really do believe that, and there's, you know, statistics to show it, that the people were excited about it. They were excited that they were liberated. But it's kind of like, again, you know, you have, you know, people that have been oppressed for so long, you throw open the jail, but there's no sense of there's no sense of structure. You know, what do I do now with this new liberty? And it became very tribal. You know, like, okay, this is my tribe versus your tribe, and I want power. And now we have, it was basically the what are they the inmates running the asylum in a sense. So, but what would have been, okay? Let me just ask this.
Sure, go ahead.
What would happen? And again, this is just rhetorical. I have no idea. What would happen if we said tomorrow, okay, we're out of here. You know, let's just pack up our bags and get out. You know, everybody leave. All Americans leave. What would happen, do you think? What would the scenario be in that area?
I think that the civil war that has already commenced in Iraq would continue. Eventually, either one side would obtain victory, or, frankly, something that I think would be just fine with me, the country would split apart. and you'd have Kurdistan in the north, which is a relatively democratic area with lots of oil and pro-American, frankly.
I've
actually supported independent Kurdistan for years, long before this.
Right.
Probably the Sunnis and Shiites would split into two separate countries. Mm-hmm. And that's okay with me. The British drew what I think were arbitrary borders after World War I. I don't think there is an Iraqi people so much as three different religious groups, kind of exactly what happened in Yugoslavia. But what I don't want is American troops in the middle of it all. I know we have a caller on the line. Chuck from Fairfax, welcome to the Inside Scoop. Did we lose Chuck? We lost Chuck. Chuck, call back. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-MARK. To me, we're going to have a civil war either way. We have the Prime Minister, Alawi, the former Prime Minister, say, if this is not a civil war, then God knows what a civil war is. And it seems to me that he has a better take of what's happening on the ground than our president and our vice president, who've been giving us these rosy scenarios from day one, from mission accomplished.
Right.
And
right.
I guess, when does it, do we come and realize, as we did in Vietnam, that as many rosy scenarios as they give us, it's just not going to happen. I would love to see Iraq become Canada in the Middle East.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going
to
happen.
Well, to be honest, my hope, and again, this is from someone who did support the president going in, you know, and understood that, you know, my gosh, we do have a global battle going on here. It supported Afghanistan, was hopeful that we would get in, topple Saddam, which we did, institute a democratic form of government, have elections, which we have. And now my sort of exit strategy has always been, okay, do all these things, then we've done what we came to do, now let's go.
So I maybe mean, we can agree it's time to leave.
I'm ready. I really am.
Really?
Ready. Oh,
that's
yeah.
very interesting.
Yeah, I really am.
Coming from your position. Let me go to the phones. Chuck from Fairfax. Welcome to the Inside Scoop.
How you doing?
Good. You're on the air. What's your question or comment?
Well, my first comment is, you talk about us having Saddam Hussein controlled. We had him controlled, but we were torturing his people through sanctions. And we took the fight to the Middle East where it was being taken to us. In the state, I am a combat veteran of the first Gulf War, and I've seen what Saddam Hussein did to his own people. And for us to be able to say that he did nothing wrong, it's just wrong on our part.
I'm not saying Saddam Hussein did nothing wrong. I think
Saddam
Hussein was a pretty vicious dictator.
Absolutely.
My point is that there are dozens, literally dozens, of countries ruled by vicious dictators. In fact, if you want to look at the worst, I would argue Sudan. Right now in Darfur, there's genocide going on. That's the worst. In Liberia, the dictator there was killing parents and making their children fight in his army. There's some brutal, brutal dictators. And so, to me, Saddam Hussein was awful, but not the worst. And if you look at threats to the United States, I see bigger threats from not just Iran and North Korea, but even countries that are our putative allies, countries like Saudi Arabia and Pakistan, where they're not controlling the people there that are threats to us. To me, the question was Iraq worth it? Was it worth 2,300 American lives and counting, 17,000 wounded and counting, 35,000 Iraqi lives, $280 billion, and the fact that we're not fighting the bigger enemies, enemies like Al-Qaeda. Chuck, don't you think Al-Qaeda is happy that we're in Iraq because it gives them ways to attack our troops that they wouldn't otherwise have? I think we lost Chuck. What's your view on all I've said?
I would want to say to Chuck and all the Chucks out there that have fought and been incredibly brave in our military, that we honor them.
We
honor what they did. We honor their sacrifice. I mean, there are no braver people, I think, in our country than the people that really, I mean, I get teary-eyed thinking about that they are willing to literally give their lives for us. You know, we might not agree with the politicians, we might not agree with the war that they're involved with, but they are willing to go and defend our freedoms. I mean, I absolutely honor them above all, and all the deaths that have occurred as a result of it. We have to always honor. I don't want to ever see us do what we did in Vietnam. I mean, this is a very emotional issue for me because I had a lot of people, a lot of friends that gave their lives in Vietnam, and they, you know, their memory was basically defiled, I think. So I would never want anyone like Mark, Chuck. Did I say Mark?
No problem.
Mark Chuck, to think that we don't honor, what they've done.
Don't we honor them best by bringing them home?
But that's what I'm trying to say. But you can't keep what would they say? The definition of insanity is to keep doing the same thing and expecting different results. And so I think that what's happening now is that we're trying to expect different results, but there's a whole dynamic that has been created now, and it's bigger than us. It really is. It's bigger than America. It's bigger than even the military that's there, that really is trying to have a wonderful presence of rebuilding schools and getting the electricity up and trying their best to be as good neighbors as they possibly can and not be seen as the oppressors that the foreign media would say that they are. But that said, it's like an uphill battle. It's like pushing a boulder uphill.
Unfortunately, the Iraqis do consider us oppressors. One of the things that I think would help, whether you support bringing the troops home, mm-hmm. you know, as soon as practicable, which is, I would argue is about 3 to 6 months, and that we could do it, or not. It seems to me that one of the things we could do right away, and George Bush could do this tomorrow, is say, we have no designs on Iraq. Now, he said we have no designs in Iraq, but to be specific, and say, we will not keep any military bases in Iraq. We will not take the oil of Iraq. We will leave that all to the Iraqi people. Mm-hmm. Because to me, the problem is the Iraqis think that mm-hmm. we are there to stay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that we're building all these bases and then we're doing the same torture chambers that Saddam Hussein used mm-hmm. are being used either by us or by the Iraqi government to do the same tortures. I'm sure that the Iraqis are glad Saddam Hussein is gone, mm-hmm. but I think they want us gone too.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe this would be a solution is that I think there are a lot of people that want the presence there, but they don't like the military uniforms. They don't like the military presence, but they like sort of the American presence, of, you know, sort of like the Big Brother kind of thing being there. What if there's a way to take the military, not have them be in uniforms, but have them sort of integrate as partners in commerce or something, somehow? Do you know what I'm saying? Sort of like, I don't know, instead of us just leaving all together, because then you don't know what's going to, I don't know, I'm just sort of thinking out loud.
Yeah,
I'm not a foreign affairs statistician by any means.
No, I understand, but I think if we had...
But sometimes you have to think sort of asymmetrically to solve these problems.
If we'd gone in from the beginning with world support, mm-hmm. if the world had supported us as they do in Afghanistan, mm-hmm. and we had dramatic world support all over the world, even some Arab countries supported our going right. there, because everyone right. understood that was self-defense. If we'd had that world support... If we had Britain and France and Canada and all the others, mm-hmm. then I think it would be seen less as an American imperialist occupation. Mm-hmm. But to me, the president has done so many things wrong, from lack of body armor to being wrong about weapons of mass destruction to being wrong about the connection with al-Qaeda to not bringing the world in on our side, that at this point, there's just no hope. I mean, it's in Vietnam, there was an election in 1967. Mm-hmm. I certainly am too young to remember it, but I know my history. Uh-huh. And there was an election in 1967, and people said, aha, now the South Vietnamese are controlling their own destiny. And from that time forward, we still lost 38,000 American lives. So an election isn't enough. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting to me is that the president seems to slowly be flip-flopping on this one, because originally he said, no timetable. You give them a timetable, and they'll attack. Right. But now he's establishing a benchmark, which I think he thinks is different from a timetable. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it suggests to me that he recognizes that the American people mm-hmm. don't support us continuing there. Mm-hmm. They're worried about the November elections. And mm-hmm. he is saying that we're going to start to reduce troops. Now, whether he actually does or not remains mm-hmm. to be seen.
Yeah. Well, you're right. And I think that if enough pressure is put on our elected officials, and we're told, you know, they're told that, yes, this is what the American people want, and with an understanding that it's not as some people said, whoops.
Don't worry about it.
A cut and run issue.
Right.
Which we're not cutting and running. It's basically we've gone in, we've done the job that, again, people that supported Bush in the beginning believed was being done. It has been done. And I'm a big believer, you know, once it's done, do it, get in, get out, and let's move on.
This is very interesting to me that we're coming from left and right positions, but mm-hmm. we're coming to the same conclusion.
Right, yeah.
If you want to join in the conversation, please feel free to do so. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-MARK. We're going to talk about all kinds of other things and anything you want to bring up right after these messages.
Oh, I hope I didn't break this.
Mrs. DeBruzzo, I'm Ed McMahon, and we're signing up
you're
people
Ed McMahon.
For. Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
you're
I am. Yeah.
Is
Murphy, Ed McMahon. We're starting up. No.
Dreams
no.
really do be come it, true.
Oh, but dinero.
No. No.
Yes,
Ed McMahon, see.
Ed McMahon.
Yes, Ed McMahon. We're having our first ever.
Ed McMahon.
Yes. Tuesday night at the high school. We're starting up the neighborhood watch in this area, and here's all the information.
Stevie, get down here, please.
Oh, he's just here.
Five, six, seven, eight.
No tango, Danelle. Neighborhood watch. We're having this neighborhood watch, the first one.
Right. Larry, put some pants on.
I'll come back.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Start a neighborhood watch. It's just one of the many ways you can help make America stronger. To find out how, call or log on for this free guide.
When I was young, my dad always told me to dream big and dream often.
My mom and dad were always my biggest cheerleaders.
I've been very fortunate to have parents that care, but some kids aren't so lucky.
That's why the Major League Baseball players trust for children.
Same with Volunteers of America, to help kids everywhere.
For more than 100 years, Volunteers of America has helped children, families, and many others rebuild their lives.
Our Share with a Child partnership wants you to give kids your time, guidance, and support.
Work together to give every child a chance. Find out how you can help a child dream big.
Call 1-800-899-0089 or visit volunteersofamerica.org.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the issues of the day, and as always, you are welcome to join in. Toll-free number 888-488-MARK, 888-488-MARK. I'm your host, Mark Levine, and my guest is Nina May. She is the founder and chairman of the Renaissance Foundation and someone who's on a different political aisle from me, but that doesn't mean we can't agree sometimes, as we seem to have, unless it's some things, on the issue of Iraq. Mm-hmm. I want to move on and talk about the film that at least I saw a four-minute clip from. Right. I haven't seen the entire thing. Mm-hmm. But tell me about Emancipation Revolution.
Revelation.
Right.
It's basically a documentary that we did, and I can now say award-winning documentary because we won a film festival. And it's about the history of the civil rights movement in America, the role that both political parties played in it, and what happens today to conservative blacks who leave the liberal plantation and decide that they want to embrace conservative ideologies or philosophies or even become Republican. And we're seeing it with Condi Rice, Colin Powell, Clarence Thomas, Michael Steele up in Maryland, who's lieutenant governor, having Oreo cookies thrown at him, being called an Uncle Tom and a traitor to his race and on and on. Keith Butler, who's running for Senate in Michigan, is getting the same treatment. Ken Blackwell in Ohio, Lynn Swan. So there are a number of blacks who are, again, leaving the liberal plantation and identifying themselves as Republican, and the outcry against them is just deafening. So that was one of the motivations for doing this, and I was just sort of interested in what really got me going about it was I was going, why is it, unravel why it is that about 90% of blacks in America vote for Democrats when it was the Republicans that were founded specifically in 1864 to abolish slavery. And the interesting thing about that is that they were founded from Democrats. It was Democrats that left the Democrat Party and created the Republican Party. It was some of the old Whigs. It was the Free Soilers. It was sort of a conglomeration of people. The thing they had in common was abolition of slavery. The first platform of the first Republican platform, 9 planks, 6 of them dealt with civil rights for blacks. You know, equal rights, voting rights, you know, on and on and on.
They weren't quite there. They're basically saying it shouldn't be moved to the territories. But there's no question that the abolitionist movement was a major part of the Republican Party. There's no question that the Democratic Party supported the segregationists for 100 years, from the end of the Civil War through the Jim Crow era. However, as I'm sure you know, a lot changed in the 1960s when John F. Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, who were elected largely by southern states, decided to embrace civil rights, to embrace the Voting Rights Act, And Richard Nixon decided to take the other tack. He decided to take on the Southern strategy. In 1968, George Wallace ran a third party against Hubert Humphrey and Richard Nixon and got a lot of the white segregationist racist Southern vote. And Richard Nixon saw that, and he developed his own Southern strategy. He decided to reach out to the Southern white racists and to abandon blacks.
Again, that's one.
As you know, a lot of senators and members of Congress switch parties.
Right.
The white Southern racists switched, most of them, from Democrats to Republicans.
That's one of the myths that we discuss in the film. We discuss that myth. We discuss the Dixiecrat myth. Dixiecrat myth was that the Southern racist Democrats split with the Democrat Party in 1948.
Well, Strom Thurmond ran for president on that.
I know exactly. That's what I'm saying. So they split with it. He lost. They went back into the Democratic Party. They did not become Republicans.
Well, Strom Thurmond became a Republican.
16 years later.
Right.
Richard Nixon
adopted the Southern strategy.
But that had nothing to do with his reasoning for doing that. And besides, the Southern strategy has nothing to do with race. It would be like today if the Democratic Party or whoever is responsible for the Democratic Party were to go in and say, we're going to go now into Detroit, Michigan, and try and get Muslim votes. It's not saying that we're trying to, you know, be anti-Christian just because we're getting Muslim votes. It was a strategy to try and get, because I'm a product of the Southern strategy. I was raised as a Democrat, but every Democrat that I knew in the South was incredibly racist. All the governors...
What years are
you
talking about here?
This was 1972. This was Nixon's time.
That was around the time of the switch.
And I voted for McGovern, too. But I became, because it was a lot of racism in the South at that time. If you look at the history of, even again, when I was young, I remember all the Southern states had Democrat-controlled governors.
That's true. They were closing. In the 60s.
This is right. 60s. They were closing the public schools because they did not want to integrate. They did not want black children to be allowed in.
But what happened in the 60s and 70s changed all that.
Okay,
I mean,
what I want to tell you that we discovered in there. Two or three things happened. One, of course, we all know that the Civil Rights Act was introduced originally by Eisenhower. It was filibustered by the Democrats, especially by what's his name, old KKK.
Robert Byrd,
who was a member of the KKK.
Yes,
we all
know
that. Okay, so the thing that happened was Goldwater, who was running against Johnson, did not support the Voting Rights Act. And he had a states' rights issue with it. It wasn't about race. It was about states' rights. He was Arizona. I mean, race, I think you've maybe seen one black person in his life. So it had nothing to do with race. But it was perceived that it had to do with race. And so when blacks heard that, oh, my gosh, this guy Goldwater doesn't support the Voting Rights Act, Republicans must be racist.
There's a whole history since the 60s and 70s, which I know you know. There's the whole issue of busing. There is the issue of the Voting Rights Act.
Exactly.
Robert Bork, who is a hero to the conservative movement, mm-hmm. believed the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was unconstitutional, that the federal government could not protect blacks' right to vote. Robert Bork, who is this hero to the conservative movement, mm-hmm. in effect, if he had his way, blacks could not vote today. And this is a guy appointed by George Bush Sr. You have all of these Republicans that were former Democratic racists. In fact, the only one who hasn't switched parties is Robert Byrd. Strom Thurmond and Richard Shelby and a whole host of them went to the Republican Party. You had in the campaign between Bush and Dukakis the famous Black Hands commercial where they show a white guy losing a job to a black person. I mean, this is the Republican mantra, and it has been since the 70s.
But the thing is, and this is the thing that we unravel in here too, is that the Democrats have claimed to be innocent in this entire thing. They basically say, we've never done anything like that. We didn't start
the
KKK. We didn't start the Jim Crow laws.
I'm going to agree with you on the old history.
But the thing is that we're saying, what we're trying to do in the film is say, okay, let's just lay it all out here. Neither party is lily white, so to speak. Neither party is absolutely guilty. Neither party is absolutely innocent. But what has happened, though, with blacks who say, that's all then. I want to move forward. I have the choice, don't I, to belong to the party that I believe represents my values,
sure.
represents my economic standing, represents how I believe, foreign affairs, foreign defense, without being called use the pejoratives, you know, the Uncle Sam's or Uncle Tom's,
but see,
Uncle
you've used
someone.
Your own pejoratives. You said the liberal plantation. Now, why do you say that blacks who choose to support the Party of Civil Rights?
That's their term.
Whose term?
That's the term.
The conservatives' term?
No. These are the term. When you interviewed 30 black conservatives, that's the term
they
use.
That the black conservatives use. But
exactly.
That's my point. They're using pejorative terms as well.
Because that's how they feel. They feel that they have been on this plantation. And think about it. You're a black person today. You're basically experiencing philosophically what you experienced 40 years ago based on the color of your skin. It's philosophical discrimination now. If a conservative black gets up in front of a group of people and declares that they are conservative or Republican, Oreo cookies are thrown at them.
Well,
they're booed
I
by...
I don't support Oreo cookies.
By guess what? Not,
but I can understand why blacks would be angry
but they're
at
not,
them.
No. They're not just being booed by blacks. They're being booed by liberal
but
whites.
But I understand why. If you look at things like Hurricane Katrina, and you look at the fact that you had Barbara
Bush
after
the mayor didn't know what he was doing,
the
governor didn't know what he was doing, and
really
suddenly he had to blame...
Focused on them.
You know, if Bush has this much trouble, he can't be this stupid and this smart at the same time. He can't be so stupid, like everyone says, but be so smart that he knows what's happening in every single city, in every single state, at every single moment.
We know he knew what was happening. Michael Brown, we've seen the video on AP.
My family's from New Orleans. That's where my father was raised. We knew every time we went into New Orleans as a kid that, my gosh, the levees could break at any moment.
So why didn't George focus on it? Why didn't George Bush
He's got 50 states to focus on. That's why you have mayors and governors. We don't have a dictatorship in America.
Here's the point.
You know, I don't see anyone going, you know, Heil Bush, because he's supposed to be in charge of every... Listen, if he had done that, if he had gone in and said, excuse me, Blanco, and what's
Blanco
that guy?
Blanco asked for federal troops, and he didn't send them for
four days. No, he didn't. No, she didn't.
Yes, she did. There's a signed order where she asked for
After she turned them down. After the
she
flooding was over.
Down.
Yes, she did. Absolutely, she turned them
she
down.
She never turned down federal troops. What she turned down was Bush's request to nationalize Louisiana National Guard. In other words, he wasn't sending federal troops. He wanted to take what she had ahead of her.
Okay,
and so
when he's trying to solve the problem, he's called names. When he doesn't solve the problem, he's called names.
It's not his problem.
Do you believe in states' rights?
I think when you have a hurricane.
I mean, do we believe in states' rights?
It depends on the situation. Yes, I do.
Okay.
But most Republicans don't believe in states' rights, as you
yes,
know.
Yes, they do.
They're supporting a federal amendment to prevent Massachusetts from having its own states' rights to let gay people have equal rights to marry. They're preventing states' rights on medical marijuana. They're against states' rights when it comes to voting in Florida.
And
the
guess
Supreme
what?
Court won't let the state
and
decide.
And guess what? They were against states' rights in slavery, too, and we did end in slavery. That was the whole issue
but
of slavery,
point, my
was states'
point is
rights.
Both parties are inconsistent about states' rights, but
okay,
when it comes to civil rights, that's when Republicans are big states' rights advocates. When it comes to the right of Southerners to keep blacks from voting, that's when they were all supporting civil rights.
That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Sure, whether it's Strom Thurmond or any of the others.
He was a Democrat when that happened.
He became a Republican in 1964.
Okay, tell me what Republican tried to keep blacks from voting. And guess what Republican right now, let me ask you this.
The Chief Justice of the United States in Arizona, worked very hard to keep blacks from voting.
What year was that?
It would be in the 70s. It would on into the 70s before he that was.
Well, I'd have looked that up.
Let's talk about in Ohio, where black neighborhoods didn't have the number of voting machines that white neighborhoods did. Let's talk about
Let's
talk about in Georgia, where the Republican Party is trying to prevent blacks from voting by requiring a voter ID.
Who is in charge of black neighborhoods? Black neighborhoods are controlled solely and totally by Democrats. You show me one Democrat, Republican-controlled black neighborhood.
The control of the voting machines was by the Secretary of State, who is himself African-American but a Republican by the name of Kenneth Blackwell.
Okay, and he's supposed to know every single precinct and what every single precinct needs.
That's his job.
Okay, who gives him that knowledge, that information?
He is the head of elections in Ohio.
Right, okay, so does he have people that
people were begging for voting machines, and he wasn't providing them.
He's saying, okay, because this community over here is black, we're not going to give them voting machines, but we're going to give them to the white. That's ridiculous. That's one of those urban myths that keeps permeating... You know, the airwaves.
I'm not saying the Republicans necessarily wanted to press the black vote because they're racist. But I will say they wanted to press the black vote because they know blacks vote for Democrats. And that's why, for example, in Georgia, you have the Voter ID Act.
Republicans have nothing to do with the inner city voting.
Look,
nothing to do. You know what? Guess what? This is, newsflash, you don't really need a voting machine to vote. You can actually take a little piece of paper, put your name on it, and stick it in a box.
Unfortunately, that's not true. I just did a show yesterday on Florida.
How can this not be true?
Florida, they have a state law. that says that you must use specific voting machines, the Diebold voting machine or two others. You cannot use paper.
Well, let's change that law. That's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard.
Well, on that,
But talk about being disenfranchised.
You have the Justice Department.
I mean, that disenfranchises people.
It does.
Another thing that disenfranchises people we need to talk about, this is your show, but...
That's okay.
But independents. Independents that can't vote in primaries. I think that's really wrong. I mean, why? Where's the law that says you have to belong to one political party or another?
I have
to be
no problem
with
that. It depends on the state. As you know, some states do allow
independents
to vote in
primaries.
But that's
disenfranchisement. That's totally disenfranchisement. What if all these blacks now that are deciding,
I don't want to be Democrat, I don't want to be Republican,
I want to be independent, I'm going to go vote. They go down to vote in a primary and they go, oh, excuse me, sorry, but you can't vote because you're not a Democrat or Republican? I think that is horrible. I just think that's awful.
I have no problem with that, per se. But you must know about the Justice Department approving all these gerrymandering schemes in Texas, which disenfranchises black. It's in Georgia, which disenfranchises
blacks. No, it was just the opposite. Barbara Jordan is the first...
Mississippi is another example.
Barbara Jordan was the very first Democrat, Southern Democrat black to be elected.
I'm talking about what happened three years ago. I love Barbara Jordan. I love Barbara Jordan. But do you know why she got elected?
Because of the gerrymandering that the Republicans pushed through. She never would have
been elected had it not been for Republicans five years ago, not 35 years ago. I don't disagree with your facts in the 70s. But today's Justice Department is actively trying to keep blacks from voting.
I'll give you three examples. Okay, give me. I gotta write these now.
Mississippi.
Everybody look these up.
That's right. Mississippi, where they had a district that would have had a better black participation, and they refused there. In Texas, you had Tom DeLay, who had to call out troops, of course, tried to monitor the Democrats who were trying to leave Texas. Remember the legislatures? He used the Homeland Security Department to try to monitor Texas legislators, Democrats, because he wanted to gerrymander Texas. They divided Austin into five regions.
Because they were leaving the state because they wouldn't come back and vote.
They were leaving the state because they didn't want to gerrymander, which had never been done in American history except every 10 years.
Because they weren't doing their job.
And then the third example, and the most severe, is Georgia.
What did Georgia do?
They not only gerrymandered the district lines, but they wanted to approve a voter ID system that in essence was a poll tax, which is expressly against the Constitution. There's an amendment that says it. They said that in order to vote, you have to purchase these voter ID cards, which are put in selective neighborhoods around Georgia. Guess where they were not? They were not in Atlanta, in the entire southern portion of Atlanta where blacks live. And every single attorney in the Justice Department, I've not heard of any of these things.
Again, these sounds like urban myths.
No, I think you should look it up. Because every single attorney in the Justice Department said this was against the Voting Rights Act.
And they were overruled by the political powers that be in the Justice Department.
Do you believe that people should have voter ID cards
to be able to vote? I mean, whether they have to pay for them or not. I mean, you've got to pay for your driver's license, right? So is that considered a poll tax? I think a driver's license
is a privilege and a voting is a right. I don't think voting is a privilege. I don't think it's like, should we decide whether you vote or not? I think every American should have the right to vote.
Okay, but should they have a card that identifies that they are a citizen, though? Do you agree with that?
You know, the problem...
Or some way to identify that? If we had
same-day registration, I have no problem with that. But how could you prove that?
I mean, I could go to 20 different polling sites and register that same day as 20 different people and vote, and by the time they've caught up with me, I've affected an entire election. Well, that doesn't make any sense.
I don't think most people... And first of all, someone that does that should go to jail 5-10 years. I have no problem with that.
But they're not putting anyone in jail that does that.
There are laws right now that say... I don't think people will risk five and ten years.
Did you know that? No, you don't.
Of course you do.
Talk to Michael Huffington about this.
You have to be a citizen.
That is why, Michael, always to vote. Not in California, you don't.
That's not true. I'm a California lawyer. I know for a fact you have to be a citizen. If you're telling me they're not enforcing it, that's a different issue. But I guarantee you have to be a citizen.
Have a long conversation with Michael Huffington about that.
The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-MARK. Or if you want to comment on the blog, you can do so as well. Go to www.radioinsidescoop.com. You, too, can join in this debate on any of the issues of the day. 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this.
This is Mommy's bed. Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, wake up. It's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up. If you give me a fish.
If you give someone a fish.
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Oh, hey, mister. Studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last cup.
Oh, no, mister. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister. What was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweet nectar.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am discussing the issues of the day with Nina May, the chairman and founder of the Renaissance Foundation. And we've discussed the war in Iraq. We've discussed why African Americans are Democrats. And we can discuss anything that you want us to if you call in at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-MARK. And you can also comment on the blog at radioinsidescoop.com. We do have a couple comments on the blog. One person writes, the liberal plantation, the reason the African Americans are loathing of the Republican Party is the Nixon Southern strategy of appealing to white segregationists. As my neighbor tells me, I, a black conservative, and would like to vote Republican, but they are racist. They are against affirmative action and refuse to recognize that our society has inequities against African Americans. Those stigmas are now being directed against Muslims instead, and points out that I was wrong about the hand crumpling the rejection letter. I had said it was the Bush Dukakis race. He said it was actually a pro-Jesse Helms advertisement against Mayor Harvey Gantt in North Carolina in 1988, and I think he's correct on that. So I stand corrected on that. But I agree with Mike. How do you respond?
Well, again, it's that myth of the Southern strategy. Another thing a lot of people don't realize, it was Nixon that instituted affirmative action. He was the one that authorized it. He wrote the bill. He set aside money.
But most Republicans today don't support it. That's a difference between the parties.
Well, you know why I don't support it? Because I think as a woman, I don't support it. Because I experienced that same thing with, you know, the women's equal thing, where when I was in law school, they, I got in on my own merit and everything like that, and I wanted to take a leave of absence. And they said, oh, please don't leave, because if you leave, it's going to change our numbers, and we need so many women in here in order to, you know,
I think it said your mic maybe have. Is your mic on? Just check. Just make sure of that.
No, it's on.
All right, it's fine. Sorry, please continue. I had no idea.
And so basically, I said, well, then I'm just a number. I mean, talk to me about telling me why I should.
I agree with you. I don't support quotas.
And it's just to me, it was very dehumanizing to be thought of as just sort of a number and as quota. And then the message was that you really didn't get here on your own. You only got here because we had all these set asides for women. And I know how that felt, and I just know black friends of mine that have been through that, and they say, you know, I really think I could compete with you. Honestly, I do. Don't look at the color of my skin. I really think I'm as smart as you. And I go, I know it.
Here's the problem, Nina. It seems to me one of my firm beliefs, and I think you probably agree with me, is we need equal opportunity in this country.
Yeah, right.
We need every person, regardless of race, regardless of income, should have an equal chance to succeed.
Right.
But we don't have that, and I know you know it's true. Our schools today are separate and unequal. If you are a rich white kid living in Beverly Hills, you can go to some of the best public schools in the country. If you live in Watts in Los Angeles, which is, you know, less than an hour away, you go to some of the worst. It's true in every state, in Chicago, in New York.
Vouchers. That's why I'm a big believer
but
in values.
But it seems to me that...
Because it gives everyone the equal opportunity.
No, what it does is... What vouchers do is you're saying to the kids in Watts, go to Beverly Hills, in effect. Why can't we provide for all schools? Here's the thing. One of the things that Republicans really like, and one of the things that, in fact, is in the president's budget, I don't think it will pass, is he wants to abolish the estate tax. Okay? What he wants to say is, if you're Anna Nicole Smith, all right, or something like that, you should get as much wealth as possible.
But you know, that's only like 1% of the population, really.
But to me, it's typical of something.
Look at these houses in McLean now. I mean, my gosh, these teeny little houses for $1 million, and you're going to get taxed on anything you leave your children.
Tell you what, we have to take another break. But when we come back, I want to discuss this issue more thoroughly. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this. That's why I took a quick break. What's the problem?
Sweetheart, smoke outside now. You promised.
Okay, hon.
Sweetheart, smoke outside now. You promised.
What kind of man are you?
I'm a father.
Look here, my father was a father, and he smoked his brains out in the house.
Watch as he blows those smoke rings on my little red face.
You probably have asthma.
Asthma? Schmasthma. I'm telling you, nothing's going to happen to your kids.
Don't swear when you're lying. You know very well that thousands of kids get bronchitis, ear infections, and even pneumonia from their parents' cigarette smoke. And didn't you promise your little angels you'd smoke outside?
Hey, Daddy.
Hi, Dad. Those little devils are just so sweet.
Do the right thing.
Please, smoke outside.
Until you can stop, go out for your kids.
Take the pledge. Call 1-800-513-1157.
A rite of passage, a challenge to join the elite. And if you succeed, if you can master your fear, outsmart your enemy, and never yield even to yourself, you will be changed forever. The few, the proud, the Marines.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. My guest is Nina May. She's the chairman and founder of the Renaissance Foundation. And she argues, in effect, in a documentary that you've sponsored, and I guess, are you the producer for this documentary?
Yeah, producer, director.
Producer and director. Uh-huh. That African-Americans should be looking more toward the Republican Party.
Well, no, that's not what I'm saying.
All right.
It's basically, it covers their history. It covers the history of the civil rights movement in America, and we interviewed about 30 different black leaders from all over the country, and many of them had lived through the civil rights movement, their experiences with it. We interviewed, like, for example, Alveda King, who's Dr. Martin Luther King's niece, and you know, her experiences with her uncle, and her father was killed, and Gloria Jackson, whose great-grandfather is Booker T. Washington, and you know, we discussed all of that. We discussed what the experiences were within the black community during segregation, during you know, height of Jim Crow laws, and how successful the black communities were, how 80% of the families were intact, how like 60% of the men owned their own businesses, and most of the businesses were, you know, business was conducted within the community, within the black community. And then when integration happened, how it basically had a there were some good parts of it, but there were some also, you know, very negative parts of integration. And then what's happening? So it's sort of past, present, and future. You know, what the revelation is that okay, we are free to think for ourselves and to choose. Now, what are we going to do with this freedom? And then talking about the welfare system and how detrimental it has been to, you know, the black community.
I mean,
and again,
the
this is their perspective. I was just the messenger.
No, I understand, but I think there are few African Americans that would say that integration wasn't, on balance, a good thing. I mean, I think
you mean segregation.
Not integration.
Was not a good thing.
But most would say that they wanted integration.
They fought for it. Because of what we were saying before about equal opportunities.
Right, but see, the problem with equal opportunity, exactly, but we don't have equal opportunity in America because descendants of slaves, most of them, don't have the capital, the financial means that more white people have. So, you know, if a woman's working two jobs and she's struggling and she's on workfare, the Republicans in Congress have cut her child care, so she can't go work, and she can't be with the kids. They've also cut student loans. They don't want the estate tax, which ends up transferring wealth from people who have hundreds of millions of dollars.
Remember, the estate tax doesn't
kick in until you're extremely wealthy.
This is the distinction between, I think, liberals and conservatives. Liberals always approach it as to how much more can the government give, how many more handouts, how many giveaway programs?
I just want to give them an equal chance. Okay. I wish that
conservatives
were black.
Here's how conservatives look at it.
As good as the ones that once are in this
nation. They say, stop taxing us so much. Stop putting so many regulations on us so we can't start businesses.
But see, here's the problem.
Stop taking so much money out of our Social Security.
Here's the problem.
Let us have private Social Security.
If you have a class of people, okay, that is oppressing another class, whether it's feudalism, whites and blacks in America, any kind, and this class, the oppressor class, gets all the labor, the free labor, all the slave labor, and makes a ton of money because of it. And then you say, all right, it's like a race.
Hold on, let me finish. It's not race, though. You're not talking about race.
Well, it was race. Originally it was race.
Oh, okay.
And so now you have, it's like a race, and you have the white far ahead of the black person in the same race because, you know, their parents don't have to work as many jobs and they might have a parent in the home and they might not, you know, they don't have the Stanley Kaplan courses and they get to go to better schools. Mm-hmm. And then you say to the blacks, okay, stop it now in this unequal state and you're on your own. It seems to me that's absolutely unfair. It's like I cheat in this game with you. I'm way ahead and I say, now we'll play fairly for the rest of the game.
Okay. Well, actually, I think there are a couple of different things that as we've revised history, we're not looking at. We're not looking at the incredible successes that were in the black community. That you know.
I think that's great, but under tremendous odds.
But you know that right out of slavery, seven blacks were elected, ex-slaves elected to Congress.
Yes, I know all about the Reconstruction era. After the disputed election of 1888, it was all put aside.
You know, look at how Booker T. Washington started the black colleges.
W.B. Du Bois talked about the talented 10th, but I don't want to give up on the other 90%.
That's very insulting, the talented 10th. That's that elite.
But that's because only 10% could achieve something in America.
Basically, we only want 10% to achieve. I think it was very elitist.
That's not how I read Du Bois. As I read what he said, our society is so tough. Mm-hmm. That if 10% get ahead, you know, we've got to stand up for them. Here's my point.
We should stand up for the other 90%,
Why
though?
Can't we help people, poor people, and many of them are African-American, and many of them are white, but poor people get an... Shouldn't every kid in America... Let me ask you this question.
Okay.
Should every kid in America, no matter how poor, have quality health care and a chance, if they succeed in school, to go to college? I think they should. What do you think?
Oh, I think so, too. Okay. If they want to go.
But currently, conservatives don't support that. Conservatives are cutting student loans. They're cutting health care for poor people. They're cutting food stamps. I mean, they're cutting the basic things that we need to have a more equal opportunity in society.
Again, it's sort of the attitude that only government can solve those problems. Do you know how many billions of dollars are in the private sector that help
solve government started these problems. It was government that instituted slavery to begin with. Government is what helped. Help the whites oppress the blacks.
Yeah.
So to say that...
Government,
you know,
run by the Democrats, thank you very much. That's the point that I was making.
Government run by the Democrats in the 1860s. But the point is government run by the Democrats since the 1960s.
All the way up into the 1900s, whenever Woodrow Wilson, what was his name?
But starting in the 1960s...
Was it Wilson? Wasn't it Wilson?
Woodrow Wilson, yes.
It was Woodrow Wilson.
In the teens. But since the 1960s, the Democratic Party has been consistent in using government to help the poor, to help the oppressed.
But
and it's Republicans saying, no, stop the boat. Don't tax these people that have hundreds of millions of dollars.
If you go into the black community and ask them how they feel about that, you will have those that will say, yeah, we want more, we want more, we want more. The majority in the middle-class blacks say we are seen as victims. It's a victimization mentality. They can't do it themselves.
Nina.
They need the government handout. They need welfare systems. They need welfare programs. And that's all they need. And we just basically give them a little bit of a check, and that's all they need.
We need both.
Exactly.
We need self-reliance, but we also need...
But the government
need,
has caused a problem, not solved a problem.
Let me ask you this. If you've got a five-year-old, all right, and he has a disease... okay? It should not matter to me whether he's black or white or poor or rich, male or female. That
right.
kid should get treatment in the richest country on earth for their disease. And to me, that's equal opportunity. And that kid should get a decent education. And it does. I don't care if his parents are in jail or on drugs. That kid is an American. It's not
no,
his
I
or
agree.
Her fault.
I agree.
But see, that's where the parties differ.
I agree. But like I say, there are other ways to do it besides the government always being there with just barely enough to get by. Instead of that, what they should do is have programs that encourage partnership between corporations, between the private sector, between churches, like the faith-based initiative situation.
So what do you have with the faith-based initiative? First of all, you have government intruding on churches, telling them what to do, just like churches are intruding on the government, and you're basically telling preachers, hey, support our political agenda, and you're getting a payout from the government. I have a real problem with the faith-based initiative.
No, they're not basically saying that. They're saying that if you're doing this, if you're helping like you're saying, the people that needed the help, we will partner with you, but we're not going to tell you then how that
but
you should.
They do. There's two problems. One,
okay.
First of all, and there was an article in the Washington Post about a week ago that talked about Hurricane Katrina.
Okay.
And it talked about the fact that for all the good that Americans did giving to the Red Cross, that it was about 1% of the needs. In other mm-hmm. words, charity was giving 1% of the needs that mm-hmm. the government could give.
Right.
So it's not even in the same ballpark. That's number one. Number two, with the faith-based initiative, we have faith-based communities that have been getting support from the government for decades, Catholic Charities, Jewish Federation, United Methodist. But what they've done for decades is said, we will not discriminate. We will treat people of all faiths. We will hire people of all faiths. The mm-hmm. only difference, and I worked on this on the Hill, so I didn't know about this one pretty well. The only difference between Bush's faith-based initiative and all the money that we gave to charities from the government for decades is that Bush wants them to have the right to discriminate, the right to say, I'm sorry, no Jews can work here, no Christians can work here, no gays can work here. Martin Luther King said...
So basically, going back to that Constitution, says the government shouldn't interfere with people's faith.
I don't think it should.
I know, so what's your problem with that?
I don't think that taxpayer money should go to people who discriminate. Why should I pay taxes
That's
for someone who's discriminating?
That's
it's not to say no blacks allowed, no Jews allowed, no gays allowed. There are religious organizations that do this.
If you have an organization, say, for example, a Muslim organization,
right,
and they are helping the inner city, and they believe strongly in what they believe in, and a Jewish person comes to want to work there, and they say, well, gee, I'm sorry, but you don't believe in the same God that we believe in, therefore, you know, we really can't
hire
you.
They don't have to hire a Jewish person, but they shouldn't get government money. They shouldn't get government money. It's very simple. If you want to have an organization that's purely your religion, fine, but don't get taxpayer support for it. And that's why we oppose the faith-based initiative, those of us that oppose it in Congress. One thing I do want to announce, all this discussion on African Americans and where they stand today, it actually ties into a forum that I did just 3 weeks ago at the University of District of Columbia that will be played right here on Channel 10 at 7 p.m. in April. And you'll be able to see live a panel. We had liberals and conservatives. I was the only white guy on the panel, as it happens. But there was a very angry community. And what struck me more than anything else in that audience was just the question after question after question of people that feel their government doesn't care about them.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't feel the government's concerned about them.
They're not.
And, well, I don't think they are either. And that's my problem with the Bush and the Republican Party.
But that's
yes.
not the role of government,
I think
I don't
it is.
Think.
I think it's the role of government to help every American not achieve a result, but just have an equal opportunity to succeed.
Okay.
I'm not saying
give someone
a job, but give them an education.
But I think the role of the government basically is to defend our freedoms and protect those freedoms to allow us to have what you're saying, equal opportunities. But the government doesn't do that. If you want to start a business, do you know how incredibly difficult it is to start a business?
And I'm afraid we have to wrap up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But Nina, I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Oh, I have too.
We've had a really good one. It will be on the website at
radioinsidescoop.com
for you or me or anyone else listening to
the
show.
Oh my gosh,
it just goes very quick. My guest was Nina May. She is the chairman and founder of the Renaissance Foundation. The name of her film is Emancipation, Revelation, and Revolution. Mm-hmm. And while I don't agree with her on many political views, I definitely agree on the need for further discussion. Liberals, conservatives, independents need to talk. Frankly, folks, that's
exactly.
what America is all about.
That's right, exactly.
This is Mark Levine from the Inside Scoop, signing off.
Bless you.
Slip away.